Welcome to Baron Craze's Visions of Horror, episode number 8, covering the 8th week of 2023, namely that would be February 19th to the 25th. All right, we started off there with the band Ground Meat, and the track was Pathological Silence. They are found on Facebook and Bandcamp. Now, before I get into everything, I do want to state that this is a re-recorded intro. The reason for this happening is, quite frankly, I should have had the show out on Saturday. There was no excuse. I should have had it done. Should have been out, packaged up and out the door and all that great stuff. Simply put, I've run into a bit of what I like to call a problem. It was purely medical related, and I'm not going to get into it really too far. It has affected a lot of things. I'm had to do some things to get out of it, so to speak. So with that, that's why the show is late. I've already obviously been working on week number 9 or episode 9. So if the demonic gods that surround me at times and all the spooks and specters and goblins and ghouls and the monsters and the creatures and the nightmare visions that plague this house that I live in will all work together in a unified bunch, maybe, just maybe, we can get the show out on Saturday as what has been intended. But I will tell you that, you know, as a programming note, and you should all be aware of this, our, I think it's our week 10th, I think it's the 10th week, the show will not be released on either Sunday or, excuse me, Saturday or Sunday, the 11th or the 12th. We have a big fundraiser that weekend, and the show will come out probably on the 13th. So just a programming note. Otherwise, hope you you like this little intro I had to do as a redo, and you enjoy the entire week that we had of films. So there you go. Thanks. Again, make sure you like the Horror Times. We're up to about 4,700 likes now, and people following such. So we're really happy with all that. So we thank you, our humbles. Thanks for that. And, otherwise, if you got any suggestions for horror films that you want me to watch, just reach out to me on Facebook or Twitter or wherever and, suggest them and I'll get on watching them. All right. Enjoy. All right, hey, welcome to February 19th, Sunday of 2023, and the film I watched was actually one that I wanted to kind of revisit, if you would. It's called The Nautilus Tape from 1973, a TV movie. This film is actually hitting its 50-year anniversary. It's an hour and 23 minutes long, and the primary reason I wanted to do this one is I've seen this film probably now 4 times, and I have reviewed it in the past. There's something about it that just kind of brings me into a nice good state, if you would. It's a type of film that if I've already been having a real havoc kind of day, and let's face it, my Sunday has not been nice. I've just wanted to kind of return to something that I enjoyed, and this kind of fits in with our revisiting past horrors column that we're now doing that will come out usually on the 1st or 2nd of the new month. So be looking forward to that in March. And with that being said, let's get into it. This is obviously a horror film. It is from director Dan Curtis. The writer was William F. Nolan and Fred Mustard Stewart. It starred Roy Thinnes, Don Porter, Angie Dickerson, Claude Atkins, Michelle Carrie and Vonette McGee. The company that put it out was NBC. A little summary about it is a newspaper publisher listens to the personal tapes of investigative reporter David Norlis, who has disappeared during an investigation. The tapes tell the story of that investigation involving the recent widow whose late husband has been seen working in his private studio. As Norlis and the widow investigate, they unravel a plot involving voodoo and the Walking Dead. Now, this film got on IMDb database a 6.3 out of 10. It was originally released on February 21st of 1973, which was a Wednesday. For those that are curious, if you went to 1486 North Sweetser Avenue, Los Angeles, California, you would find the Court Estate location. A little trivia note for you, the Court Estate House is also the location of where the vampire Catherine hides at the end of episode 4 of the TV series Kolchak the Night Stalker, which aired on October 4th of 1974. The series had also started out as a Dan Curtis production. This movie was intended as a TV pilot for the TV series of the same name, but was not picked up by NBC. The reason for that was probably, you know, had the film end with an ambiguous ending, which kind of left the viewer hanging in the midair. So a little spoiler there, but you should expect spoilers with a show like this. Now, what was also happening is you can see there, the Night Stalker came out, you know, pretty much in the fourth episode, right, of 74. And this is happening in 73. Well, you see, Mr. Curtis was basically submitting quite a few different pilots. Well, they're not all going to get picked up. I'm sorry. You know, this isn't like Law and Order, where you could have Law and Order here and a Law and Order there and a Law and Order over there. And then you got another, you know, oh, over here we got Chicago shows and we got multiple FBI shows. I'm sorry. It wasn't that time period where you could have all these different things happening. It was just, you know, if you were lucky as a producer to get one picked up, hey, that's all you really wanted in life. So be aware of that. I do want to state to you where you can find this is that if you're following the script from thehorrortimes.com and you're looking at the link, then you will actually be able to watch the full movie because I put the link there because it's off of YouTube, just for your curiosity. I guess I should dive into my opinion of this. Again, this is always one of those that I always like to come back to and revisit from time to time. And like I said, I've seen it quite a few times at different stages of my life, you know, as a teenager, then in my 20s, and probably somewhere about like late 30s, 40s. And now I've just recently rewatched it one more time for the article, again, revisiting past horrors and for the February. So we got Dan Curtis, who original creator of Dark Shadows and made some great monster films in the 70s, you know, shopped, you know, it's a Kolchak. And this is pretty much very similar to Kolchak. It is very, very similar. A few key differences, but not many. And yet Kolchak is what got picked up. Even for a short run, it's still what it found its footing, if you would. Now, this one does have that occult vampire meets voodoo element to it, horror movie, but yet somehow it was a pretty good movie. And when I'm saying good movie, I do mean probably one of the better films of the 70s. Again, there was plenty of TV horror that came out in the 70s, and that traipsed over into the 80s, more to where it would say it was sci-fi channel getting involved into it, and then, of course, in the 90s and so forth. But this is one of those really good movies. Now, again, there are a lot of films from the 70s. It felt like ABC, CBS, and NBC, the three biggies, were constantly working on getting the, how should I put it, the occult or the horror films out there. So I always find that to be interesting. Always a visit. People always go, oh, look at what they wore, look at the setting, and look how old it looks. I hate to tell you this. I really hate to do this to you, but yes, you may be in 2023 now, but let's face it, when people come back and maybe watch a movie that came out in 2023, and it's the year, I don't know, 2093, okay? So we're talking basically 60 years. I wonder how they're going to judge you. I wonder how they're going to judge your films, your attitudes, your actions, your decor, everything, your music. How are they going to judge? You think you're going to be, oh, the glory of there, or is it not going to be there? I mean, that's really the key question. That becomes an interesting thing, doesn't it? Think about that for just a moment. Kind of spooky. All right. Anyway, I found it to be a good one. It's got some pretty good acting. A thriller more than horror. Mystery is definitely in there, too. you know, aside from the ending, I think it's a really good movie, and I think you guys would all like it. So with that being said, that's the film I watched for today. You guys will be listening to more stuff, so we don't know what tomorrow brings, but you'll hear it in just a few moments. I always have to get used to that. I'm signing off now, but when this actual recording goes off, it's just a couple minutes or seconds later, and some music plays, and there you go. So it's kind of weird for me still.
You have killed. And you will kill again.
Greetings and welcome to another day here of the Visions of Horror for our week 8, episode 8. Hope your Monday's going well, because it's Monday all day long. So, hope the February 20th for you is working out well. Anyway, we started off with the band that played here. Won't Stay Dead with the track You Will Kill Again. They are found on Facebook and Bandcamp, so thanks for them for the permission to play their music. They will be featured on the Screaming Horror broadcast. It's going to come out later this month, so be aware of that. And kind of coincides with the movie I saw for today, which was You Might Be the Killer from 2018. This film was had a no rating or not rated. It was an hour and 32 minutes long, and it celebrated its fifth anniversary. It's a comedy horror mystery flick from Brett Simmons. And the writers for this film were Thomas P. Vitel. There's Brett helping out. Kovis, I'm going to spell his last name, B-E-R-Z-O-Y-N-E. Chuck Wendig and Sam Sykes. Now, the film, it starred Fran Kranz, Allison Hannigan, Brittany S. Hall, Jenna Harvey, Brian Pierce, Patrick Walker, and let me see here for some reason. Oh, there we go. Carol Jean Wells. Company that put it out was Screen Media Films. Now, this film got a 5.9 out of 10. And why? Because it's a crafty, well-done horror comedy. Now, the summary of this film seems very basic. A camp counselor suffering from blackouts finds himself surrounded by murder victims. He turns to his horror movie enthusiast friend for advice and has to contend with the possibility that they are, in fact, the actual killer. So, you know, it's got an interesting twist to it. Now, this film originally had the release date of December 4th of 2018. But again, The Visions of Horror is not designed by me. It's designed by friends and fiends and other maniacs I seem to know who come up with this entire list of films for me to watch, and they just pick it. So whatever they did, they decided, nope, we're going to put this film in now so you get to watch it. Now, we do have two taglines, and people do like that I do these. First up, it's summer camp. What did you expect? All right, I mean, you know, normally we go over that 3 to 5 words, but, you know, I can go with this one. I mean, it's a little bit longer, but I can go with it. The next one is, I hate to say this, but, all right, and I get what they're doing there. This probably came, obviously, right before the title. I hate to say this, and then you put the title, you might be the killer. I get it. It's a little, clunky, but I get it. I like the first one, though. The budget for this film was $1.3 million. We don't have a what it gross, but there you go. Though there is a clear reference to the film Monkey Shines with the monkey and the symbols at Chuck's workplace. So be on the lookout for that. Now, this film does make a reference to quite a few horror flicks, so we're going to go right down the list. We have Psycho from 1960, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 74, Halloween 78, Friday the 13th, 1980, A Nightmare on Elm Street from 84, Friday the 13th, Part 6, Jason Lives from 86, Maniac Cop from 88, Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood from 88, Jacob's Ladder from 1990, Wolf's Bane from 2009, House of Bones from 2010, Mask Maker from 2011, then it's Swamp Shark from 2011, and finally Starve from 2014. Now, for the film, here, I just see it through somebody's DVD, I believe it was. I mean, I got stacks and stacks of DVDs all around me, so it probably came from one of those stacks. I did watch it with a few other people, so it's very easy. Somebody brought it over. Anyway, this is, in my opinion, yes. Let's get it clear first. Is it a slasher movie? Yes, but it's done in a different way. We have this camp counselor, Sam, which has got a very good and kind of likable performance from Frank Kranz there. That's K-R-A-N-Z. And, you know, he's trying to figure out if he's on the run from the mask killer or is he actually the killer. And I kind of like this. It's like I said, a little bit different. It's an enjoyable pacing to this story. It's a little quick. It does maintain a very good engagement with the audience, if you would. There is a bit of tongue-in-cheek delivery there, which I think is good, especially when it starts poking some fun at itself. Really embracing that that 80s culture. In fact, let's be very honest. The film does feel at times tip its hat, if you would, to the trashy side of slasher. And let's be honest. Slasher movies do have a bit of a hard edge to them. The proverbial woke culture, I guess they like to put it as, won't like slasher movies for the most part. They're very, very, very rough edge, if you would. But then again, horror is rough. Horror is not meant to sugarcoat what you're watching. I mean, look, I always say the word horror. It's a harsh word. It's got 3 R's in it. It is an abrasive genre to itself. So be aware of that. But it does... What I do like is that the film echoes to the past very nicely. And again, it does take advantage of a lot of the horror cliches. So if you are of a drinking age and you want to drink, this is a great movie to do that too. Because it's basically drinking to how many cliches you can find or how many did you miss or, you know, different ones like this. You can have a lot of fun with this type of movie, and that's great. It's a good mixture of comedy and horror. And sometimes it doesn't always work. But yet this film, I feel, really brings that on, and it shows you what the director can bring to to the forefront there. What the cast was able to do and weave themselves very well with each other. I could just imagine that during those setups of the cameras and the camera angles and the lighting and all this, there must have been some moments with the cast kind of playing off of each other, having a bit of fun with each other and their characters. Because it does seem that there's a very good amount of chemistry that's occurring with these characters. There's a nice even flow with them all. And I think that really helps entertain one with the movie. So, yes, I would definitely recommend you seeing this film. And with that, look at that. I closed out on the Monday one. And for me, I'm done for the day. For you all, it's just a couple of moments until you hear Tuesday. So I'm still trying to figure out how to do that and transition nicely, but I don't think I'll ever figure it out. But you guys don't seem to care. You guys are really loving this show. So, hey, it's just a weird thing that in a couple of moments, you're going to go listen for Tuesday, and I'm just chilling for the rest of the day doing about 20 other things. So, enjoy.
From the wrong and have the ways with the ones we find. I met a birdie there last night. It would thank saying I caught my tears, so I devoured her on sight. As an I've been possessed for years, you came along and broke my heart. One handful's all it took to know we were chaos from the start. Uh-oh, I don't mind, even when you're so find out how wrong we can be. Oh no, I want inside, not just your mind, but your filthy hide. Your mouth and your eyes, sweet as mom's milk, sick as flies. And your crazy makes me wet, but I'm the one with the damaged brain. And when you're gone, I won't forget. But I'd rather have you up in chains. I didn't ask to be like this. Create a pervert, then you turn your face. I'd rather go to the abyss than return to the human race. I will sing along. I know you feel you don't belong inside this bog. Milk sick as fine.
Welcome to Tuesday, February 21st. We just opened it up here with Harley Poe, and the track was Meet You at the Swamp. I found this artist on Instagram, Facebook, and Bandcamp. Well, the film I saw for today was Sea Beast. It's about the closest movie title I could come with something with the theme of Sea Beast. This is a TV movie from 2008. The original title was Troglodyte. Now, purely to note here, this was a TV-14 movie with an hour and 27 minutes. Now, before I dive into this a little bit further, I do want to mention that, yes, it is true. There is a band out there that has the name Troglodyte to it. However, I don't think you guys, some of you at least, wouldn't want me to play their music, mainly because they're pretty much on the harsh side of death metal meets grindcore. So I don't think some of you guys would be really particularly happy with that type of music. So the movie is celebrating an anniversary. It's 15 years old. It's an action, adventure, comedy, horror. Wow, it takes thinking the depth of four of the genres here to get to horror. The director was Paul Ziller, who also was a writer on the film, along with Anil, let me get his name, Elman. It starred Corinne, then it's N-E-M-E-C, Gary Hudson, Miriam McDonald, Daniel Whistler, Camille Sullivan, and Gwyneth Walsh. Came out from the Sci-Fi Channel. Before I get any further into this film, it is basically a 4.2 out of 10 with the summary of a mythic creatures emerge from the sea to feast on the residents of a fishing village. Ooh, now this film originally came out on June 30th of 2008, but as I stated yesterday, that again, I do not put the list together. Others do that, so what they put on the list is my job to watch it and now report on it. Now, for our taglines, we do have three of them. And again, you guys really do like me doing this part, so I will continue it. It's a It is a feeding frenzy. All right, that's fine. The jaws of death just got hungrier. Do we really need to say the hungrier? We already know the movie is called Sea Beast, right? So why not just say the jaws of death? You know what I mean? Death is in the jaws. Something like that. You know, you could play on that. That would be an interesting death in the jaws, because then you got the thought of the movie Jaws kind of going through your head, and even though it's indirectly trying to state that. And then lastly, some things should stay in the deep. We get it. It's in the deep ocean. We understand there are things that are way down there that we wouldn't want to meet, you know, at any given moment. We understand that, but it doesn't really work for me. It's seven words long. It doesn't really work. And the other one, yes, well, that is seven words long. It's a little clunky. At best, I would go with is a fleeting frenzy, but I still like the one I used just now. You know, death. You know, the jaws of death is nice. Death is in the jaws. You know, that kind of thing. You can have a little fun there. Death in the jaws. Four words. Works well. Gives you enough there that death is coming for you if you are find yourself in the jaws of this thing. There you go, right? So, again, being a tagline doctor, you can see how I get paid for what I do. All right, so a little trivia about the film. Basically, the end sequence, and I want to kind of work around this so you guys don't get too much of the story given away, was aboard a decommissioned Queen of Sydney, which was about 138-car ferry that served the British Columbia Ferry Corporation from 1960 to 2000, and now rests in the kind of Silverdale Ferry Graveyard near Mission, BC, which would be British Columbia. So I'm kind of noting that also for our friends out there who like to track down real locations where films were done. So that's something for you guys to always enjoy. And Sea Beast is actually based off of The Deep Ones, which was originally created by H.P. Lovecraft. So if you know of that story, then you will understand Sea Beast even better. So just kind of note that one. For finding this film, you can really find it in a lot of places. You can find it on Amazon Prime, Plex, Pluto, and Tubi. So it's pretty easy to find the movie. It's nothing complex. As for my opinion about the movie, look, one, it's a television movie. Okay, so we got that out there, right? It's a B movie, and that's understand that. It's got some cheesy lines to it, some cheesy scenes, and some of the action in the film is really like you can groan during it because you're like, oh, you can be playing on your phone and trying to watch this movie at the same time, and you probably would do fine. It's got some of the typical cliches that you guys are really used to. Those normal tropes are definitely throughout it. I would have to say that we got a lot of Lake Placid in this movie. There's a lot of it really layered in here, along with maybe a couple drops of some sci-fi just thrown in for good measure. So is it watchable? Yes. Is it entertaining? Ho-hum on that one. I mean, it is a TV movie. You know it's from the Sci-Fi Channel, so take it for what it's worth. I mean, that's a basic, I don't mean to really water it down, but that's really what you got there. Does it have a lot wrong with it? Of course, there's no question about that. It's got some nice scenery to it, all right? And the soundtrack isn't really too bad about it. And I think some of the actors work well with each other. There is what I like to call a lack of rehearsal. Because some of the line delivery feels like it's almost as if somebody's trying to figure out, do I need to exert more or less? So that direction error might be a little wobbly at times. Not in the camera work. Okay, not in the camera work. But in that delivery from the characters, which can ruin a scene in seconds. I mean, everything else can go. Sound, lighting, special effects, stunt coordinator, everything can be working. But if the line feels unnatural or not as believable as you want to have it, that starts to destroy that illusion that you have developed for this film, right? So that can have a great factor, and it does happen in the movie, so be aware of that, all right? But otherwise, it is what it is. It's predictable? Yes. Have you seen this kind of film before? Yes. The editing, I will be honest, is a bit mishandled. But that could also be due to the director and editor knowing that this film is going to be chopped up for commercial breaks. So they try to film it in a way where it should come up for a suspense moment. And then there should be, okay, a series of commercials. So they're trying to weave themselves through and up and down for about every 12 minutes. They know that there's going to be a commercial break, so they could have been editing the story to almost be ready for those breaks as not to lose a lot of the storyline or not have the action and such hit at the right moment, which is very difficult if you think about it. Think that you make a movie, let's say it's an hour and 90 minutes long, right? So, I mean, an hour and 9 minutes, it's an hour and 30 minutes long, so that's 90 minutes. Now, you know that for the actual film slot time, you don't really have 90 minutes. You're probably back down to maybe an hour and 15 to maybe an hour and 20, depending. And now you got to weave your story through so it hits just right, because you know it's a TV movie, that every 10 to 12 minutes, you're going to have a commercial break. That becomes difficult to have your action and your film and your suspense moments all hit at the right moment. So when you go to break, you retain some of that audience to come back to watch a movie. Because, let's face it, that's when the film came out. Now it's on Tubi and different things. But you know also on Tubi and these other ones, there's going to be a break. Whether that break is 10 seconds long or 30 seconds long or a minute long, there's going to be a break. So again, they have to give you something to pull you back. And it's difficult. So be aware of that for these films. Otherwise, that pretty much ties us out for our Tuesday movie. So, like I said, in a few minutes, you'll be listening for Wednesday. And otherwise, that's that.
Even a man who is pure in heart and says his prayers by night may become a wolf when the wolf bane looms. And the autumn moon is bright.
what happened to him?
A wolf bit him.
For I am wolf!
There's something very tragic about that man. I'm sure that nothing but harm will come to you through him.
My hideous howl, a dog to death, like the call of the wild. Take your last breath. Roam in the night, a beast of fright, upon the woods of the gypsies' countryside.
Pentagram, the sign of the wolf. It can break the evil spell.
For I am wolf, roaming free. I am wolf, just let me be.
Whoever is bitten becomes a werewolf himself.
It says his prayers by night. May become a wolf when the wolf bane blows and the autumn moon is
Wednesday. Well, I hope your Wednesday here is going well. It is February 22nd. The month is just speeding by. Well, we started off with a band called Prowler with the track I Am Wolf. Now, I know you guys want to be curious about this band. It's a heavy metal band, and they're no longer in existence. Well, I guess that basically settles that. The band gave me permission one time, and then shortly after, maybe a year, they broke up, and that was it. Oh, well, the movie I saw today was a real throwback one. It's a TV movie, and it was called Death Moon from 1978. It is unrated, an hour and 30 minutes long, and yes, it is celebrating an anniversary, 45 years old. A horror mystery, yes. Yeah, here we go. So, the director was Bruce Kessler, and the writers on this particular film were Jay Benson, and then George, and I'm not going to get this right, it's S-C-H-E-N-C-K. Now, it starred Robert Foxworth, Deborah Lee Scott, Joe Penny, Barbara Trentham, Dolph Sweet, and France... I'm just going to spell it. It's N-U-Y-E-M. I know you guys are saying, Ben, why aren't we doing the Google Translator? Some people said I was overusing it and that they would like me to be more natural with everything. So we're trying to do that. So I think if we got a film that's got a lot of foreign actors in it, I'm going to be using the Google Translator. Otherwise, I will try to make my way through everything by just going natural style. If that gets a little too much for me, I will use a Google Translator if it is necessary. This film was put out by CBS, and this was originally out on May 31st of 1978, which would be a Wednesday for those who care. And it got a 4 out of 10, which I think is about what it deserves, by the way. Now, what is this movie about? Come on, don't you guys know? Probably not. They probably haven't even heard of it, right? Even those who are following along reading the script right now are probably going with, what in the hell does Baron watch? And how do they find out about these films? It's an interesting methodology. I swear it is. I mean, it's not just a matter of going on the Internet Movie Database, looking up what films came out in, say, 1978. That's great. Then it's a matter of saying, where do you find these movies? That becomes a new challenge. You go, well, if it's not on this station, it's not on this one, it's not on this one, then where is it? How do you find it? That always becomes the next challenging phase in this, because, again, it's one thing that somebody puts the list together, but obviously they have to figure out where that movie's coming from. So they can't just sit there and take an afternoon and put the list together. Well, they can do that, but then they got to spend the time going with, where is this movie? Is it in Baron's collection? Is it in one of the boxes? Is it in a bin? Do you own it? Does she own it? Do they have it at their house? Is it over? Where do you find it? So I always find that to be the more interesting aspect. So anyway, summary. A manager is sent to vacation by his doctor due to symptoms of stress. All right. I guess then the vacation is considered a medical expense. I mean, it's going to be a neat write-off. He chooses Hawaii. Why not, right? Because that's where his grandfather worked as a missionary. He doesn't know that his grandpa and all the male successors are cursed by a voodoo clan. And every night he transforms into a werewolf and horribly slays young women. Okay, I got a lot of questions right off the bat with the summary, and I watched the film. So my first thing was, he's under stress. Is he killing young women in where he lives currently? It doesn't seem to be that, and it doesn't seem to be that was a storyline. And if his male successors are all the ones doing all the killing, you think one of them has left a note for somebody else going with, hey, just to let you know, we're all cursed, so this is the wind up here. Stop having children and either kill yourself or just lock yourself away someplace. Also, that he turns into a werewolf and horribly starts to murder women. Now, is that because he's now in Hawaii, closer to the voodoo clan? Or when did he start killing? I mean, because my thing is, do we wait for puberty? Is it when you turn 21? Is it when you have a successful job? Because if the male is supposed to be doing all the killing, then why doesn't he start doing the killing at age 5? You know what I mean? Why is he waiting? Why does he turn into a werewolf when he's a little child? I mean, can you think about that? Children werewolves. I mean, come on, filmmakers, work with me here. Children werewolves. I mean, come on. I mean, you see that the werewolves' life cycle is that they're aging. They've got ones with silver hair, so it means they're older ones, right? So why couldn't you have children ones? Look, we had, the Interview with the Vampire. You had one of them bite a little girl, and her hair wouldn't change, and she was never going to age at all, really. So there you go. You know, you had a child vampire, right? So why not children werewolves? But all right. Obviously, that wasn't in the film, but I was thought, oh, that would be so cool, wouldn't it? Why not? You got father and son teams, right? That would really screw up the police investigation. Sir, what? We found little children footprints. Well, really claw prints of some younger animal and then some older one, too. It's just really strange. It could be a lot of fun. Blood type. Well, they seem to be related. A father and son kill team of animals? Is that possible? Well, it could be if they're in a pack or something. You know, it could be a lot of fun. Sorry. Anyway, the tagline for the film is, an island of pleasures terrorized by a werewolf cursed to kill. All right, first of all, far too long. far, far too long right there. We're looking at 11 words. And besides that, we know there's a werewolf. We understand that. Curse to kill. What? Curse to do home ec? Curse to, you know, be a maid around your house? Of course it's going to kill. What do you think? I mean, the only werewolf that we all think we can think of that doesn't go around killing would be Teen Wolf. All right? I didn't see Michael J. Fox going around killing anybody. What did he do? He go play basketball. All right. So that was interesting. Fun movie, I guess. I don't know. I mean, did I see the film? Yeah, because there was a werewolf. And, you know, I didn't know any better. I was a kid. I was like, ooh, werewolf! Michael J. Fox! Watched it. Wait a minute. We don't have any horror here. We only have a werewolf. No fun. So, yeah. Okay. Now, the film was actually filmed in Hawaii, so that's always a nice thing. And you guys will now know, if you are following along with the script, we'll probably figure it out by now, that you can watch this film on YouTube in its entirety. We have the link down there that says found, and there's the link for the movie. Now, for my opinion, it is really good attempt at a scary movie. It does try, and it does put it in a pretty cool setting. And yes, the werewolf is a cheap costume. Let's face it, it's the 70s, right? And it's a Hawaii with cocktail settings. I mean, whoever came up with this plan to go, let's go film Hawaii, really knew what they were doing, because they got everybody to have a good time. Because everybody was on set, you could tell, was just hanging back, having a good time. There is a very strange music soundtrack accompanying this movie. It's not synth, it's not rock. It's just something else that somebody came up with. And, of course, the voodoo witch, which I find to be a little play here. Witch and voodoo do not exactly go together. I don't... Voodoo witch? I mean, I've heard of a voodoo queen, a voodoo priestess, but I've never heard of the voodoo witch. It's just... I don't know. It doesn't sound right. So, anyway, just note that. You know, how do I put this? I'm trying to think of the best way to put this next part. The wolf sequences are pretty good. I mean, you know, let's face it. The werewolf does walk as an upright one. It's been a while since we've really had that as a person. Still wearing kind of clothing. Not just one big hairy beast. And it might have been one of the last werewolf movies to do that. I'm trying to think, even now. I think maybe Wolf, with Jack Nicholson, the wolf is upright and still kind of dressed in clothing. But, you know, it's got the best you can have for what it is. I mean, let's face it, the wolf look for the 80s, we've got a lot of wolves, you know, up on their hind legs, covered in hair, right? And that would be the Howling... An American Werewolf in London. I think even Silver Bullet does that. It really gives that more iconic look of the werewolf. But this one, I think, tries to harken back to the original Wolf Man from 1941. So, you know, taking that into element, I think that works pretty well. Otherwise, like I said, it's a TV movie, and you can take it or leave it for what it's worth. But it is horror, and if you're going to be like me, a purist for the genre, then you're going to watch every single horror movie that comes down the road or springs out behind the bushes or creeps out of the attic or rises from the dead, and you got to watch it. So, hey, I hope you guys enjoy that. And, you know, like I said, in a moment, you guys will be listening to the Thursday episode. Others who are following along with the script on the Horror Times on their podcast, you found the show, are reading down the script, and they're already at the bottom of the script and enjoying themselves, but they realize, hey, wait a minute, everything on this script is not on the show also, so Baron has eliminated things. That's right. I'm not going to give you an easy ride. Hey, I'll read, and then I'll have to listen to the show. I have to listen to the show to get other information, so there you guys go. Otherwise, hey, we're done for today. Hey, greetings and welcome to February 23rd, Thursday. I hope your day is going well. Mine is going very nicely. Well, we started off with the band Fierce Deity. That's D-E-I-T-Y. And the track was Diary of a Madman, an Ozzy Osbourne cover. The band is found on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Bandcamp, and even put a link up there. So you guys can hear their music. It's just, I think, the band's logo and the actual track playing. Now, I always like to play new bands that I get permission to play. Give you a little taste for them so you guys will then hear them on Shredding Metal Beats, for example. This band I heard on Bandcamp, went and located them on Facebook, got their permission, and here we go. Now, when I saw that they did this cover track here, I thought, ooh, this will work in just perfect when I come up for this film. Because, again, I saw it early in the month that, hey, look what's down there on that February 23rd. By the way, looking at February 23rd, it makes me think, geez, in 3 months, I turn 50. Wow. Whew, how time flies by. Anyway, also on this day, I did watch another film. It was Zombie Strippers from 2008, but I figured I'm going to focus my attention on the 1963 Diary of a Madman movie, because let's face it, it's Vincent Price. I mean, what more could you possibly want, right? What else can I possibly do in that situation? So there you go for that. All right, let's get right into it. This is an anniversary film, 60 years old, and it's a horror movie. Now, as for our director, let's get the Google Translator to help us out.
Reginald Laborg.
Thank you very much, Google Translator. And as for our writers, let's see if we can get another helping hand here.
Guy de Maupassant, Robert E. Kent.
All right, there we go. Hey, but I think it can handle the stars in this film. We got Vincent Price, Nancy Kovac, Ian Wolfe, Elaine Devry, that's D-E-V-R-Y, Chris Warfield, Mary Adams, Dick Wilson, and Harvey Stevens. Just a pure note here, that Harvey Stevens has no relation to the Harvey Stevens from The Omen. Two entirely different actors. The company that put out the movie is United Artists. Obviously, this has got an interesting rating here. 6.3 out of 10. The reason I say it's interesting, because the movie came out in 1963, and it's got a 6.3 rating. I always find these little things a little curious. Anyway, the film was originally released on February 23rd of 1963. And the summary? An evil spirit leaves the body of his human host, a criminal on death row, and sneaks into the body of his next human host, a French magistrate. It's an interesting story, to say the least. Some taglines, well, we have two. One is extremely too long. First up, it's, he upholds the law, except when he murders. And this next one's got 14 words in it, and it's far too much for anybody. The most diabolical pages ever written become the most terrifying motion picture ever created. Oh, please. Oh, please. What are we doing? This is what I like to call really lazy tagline writing. Very lazy. It is, pour more adjectives into it, do everything else. You didn't need to do that, all that. Telling us it's the most terrifying motion. Please, it's 1963, the most terrifying motion picture ever made? I don't think so. It's not right. It's not what we need. So I have a lot of problems with that statement right there. Now, the budget for the film was $350,000, which in 1963 was a lot of money. But, hey, it still made a pretty good buck at the box office. We don't know how much. But we do know it did well, because it still lasts the test of time. This was also the final theatrical film for Lewis Martin. All right, this particular film is available on Amazon, so you guys can check it out through there. I have it on one of my Vincent Price collection box sets, so that's how I watch the movie. And I do want to state here for just my opinion, before I really dive into my thorough opinion about the movie, Vincent Price is terrific in this movie. He really is. But, you know, in these vehicles, he always had this essence about himself to carry himself in these movies. There's something about Lee, Cushing, Price, Lugosi. I mean, all of these actors, they all had this one major element about themselves, that they could enter a room and command full control of it. And in fact, it wasn't just about entering the room. Wherever they stood in that room, they would command that room. They had that, I don't know how to put it, they had this ability just to be there. Their mere presence was something that would benefit them really well. You know, the set design is really beautiful here. It's very well done. For even given a low-key elements. I find the plot to be interesting. The acting is very good, especially, again, Price and Kovac are just nailing it every which way there. You know, even when there's, like, no violence, the murder scenes are done as best they can be. I mean, look, are they faked? Yeah, well faked. But, you know, there is no violence, and I don't know why they didn't really put it in there. It is the early 60s. If you think about it, you had Psycho just 3 years ago, and you had the brutal killing in the shower. But here we are, we're back, and there's still not really enough there. So that may be a downfall for some people. But this film is really going to be It's something that if you are a Price fan, you're going to like the movie a lot. And if you're not, you're going to go ho-hum about it. It is an interesting discussion with Price and the demon about good and evil and morality and different forms of it. I think this really leads up to an interesting conclusion to the film. I always like these movies that have this. It's not a religious horror, and let's understand that, but it does touch on it. There's our little drips and drabs of it in there, where the demon figure, if you would, is having this morality conversation, is trying to do a yin and yang with its human host. So there is a bit of that philosophy being draped in there, which could be offensive to some people, and actually, believe it or not, in 1963, was offensive to some of the religious community. They found this film to be not taking the demonic things seriously. Just think, 63, and in about 10 years' time, demonic? Oh, we'll get to that. That'll be called The Exorcist. That's going to get every religious guru going completely nuts at the theaters. But yeah, Vincent Price during the 1960s was really on it. I mean, constantly. Every time he turned around, he was releasing another film multiple times a year. There was a film coming out. So there was a lot happening. So it's really a very watchable movie. Yes, if you are an aspiring actor, you can see his presence in the room. You never see him like... Price never had a look for his mark. He just knew wherever he stopped, that was where he needed to be. You figure out the camera. You figure out the lighting, all right? But if you're an aspiring actor, your director tells you you need to walk 15 feet to this mark in the room. Don't start looking down on the floor for your mark. I hate when I see it in a film. You should do it on at least one rehearsal, if not two. Find something to make sure you know where your mark is. Price is walking around these little set designs here, and he's really nailing where he's supposed to be. And it makes the other actors, I think, up their game when Price is right there on the set with them. So otherwise, I think this is a great movie. I would definitely recommend anybody to watch it. It is not going to be something you're going to find on Prime or things like that. Although maybe if you wait for the Halloween season to come along, you do have a great shot of finding the film at that time of the year to watch it. Anyway, here you guys go. It would be great if somebody maybe came out. I don't want this, but you know eventually they're going to remake this movie. As to who I think could maybe pull a Price off, I would have to say Nicolas Cage, I think, could do it well. I think he could really nail Price down very well. So that's just my opinion of that. But hey, I'll close it out for now. Like I said, it's always weird. I'm closing it down for the day on this. And in just a couple moments, you'll be hearing Friday's replay, if you would, of the movie. Some of you are going to be reading along with the script and realize, hey, here's what went on. But then you have already figured out that what's on the script is not everything that's in the show. So you won't get all the details until you hear me speak. So it's great. Hey, you guys reading ahead. I mean, I've gotten those comments, but it's not until you have to keep listening a little bit more to actually hear all the little drips and drags I put into what I actually saw on the screen. All right, so we're done. We'll be right back. Thank God it's Friday. That's what everybody always says. But it's really bad if you got to work the next day. Well, anyway, it's February 24th. We just listened to Bloody Hammers. I love this band. I think you guys know that so well. Anyway, we played the track Necromancer. Why did we play that? Well, it kind of goes with the movie I saw. It was Necromancer from 1988. See how these two things go together so well? Rated R, an hour and 28 minutes long. And yes, it's another anniversary film. 35 years. Whew! Anyway, it's rated R. It's from director Dusty Nelson. And it was from writer William T. I want to say it's Naud. It's N-A-U-D. Now, it stars Elizabeth Katten, K-A-I-T-A-N. Some of you may remember she was in part 7 of the Friday 13th series, The New Blood. Then we have John Tyler and Lois Mastern Ewing and Russ Tamblyn. I hope I got these ones right. I think maybe it's in Tamblyn, if I maybe correct myself there. The companies that put it out for DVD was Image Entertainment, and then on a Blu-ray came Vinegar Syndrome. Out of 10 on the Internet Movie Database rating system, it's got a 4.4. Release date was February 24th, 1988 in Italy. That's right. Even depending on where it is, we always try to go with the first date that it's always been released. That's always been a ground rule for trying to get films into the schedule. Anyway, summary. Julia, a college student, is sexually assaulted by two fellow students. Desperate for revenge, she makes contact with a necromancer who begins using her demonic powers to get rid of any guy that Julie hates. So what we have here, and I'll just put it out now, this is kind of a, yes, it's a horror movie, but it goes on the rape-revenge cycle. So we have a little bit of religion horror being played in here. Rape-revenge, obviously, storylines. You know, if you're unfamiliar with that, you can think of Ms. 45 or I Spit in Your Grave is a great example of that. Anyway, tagline, when simple revenge is not enough. Well, okay, I mean, I get it, but you didn't need to put the word simple. Because to me, simple simplifies everything, right? Oh, it's just simple this, it's just a simple... No. You know, basically, you know, revenge is not enough. That's all you need. Four words. Understand, not when. Doesn't matter about time. Doesn't, right? This happened when it happened. Doesn't matter when it happened. Bang, right? You don't need the when. It doesn't need to be simple. Revenge is not enough. Okay? Meaning you need more than just revenge. Vengeance. You know, there you go, right? When, you know, you could put something down like, I don't know, revenge and vengeance, right? Revenge and vengeance is whatever, right? You could have things like this. You want to make it forceful and not. And what I notice on some of these taglines, like on this one, we're dealing with a sexual assault. I hate to say this, and this may not be really right of me to say, but you really should get a tagline that's going to understand the motivation in that revenge, in that person has been violated. Now you want to exact a revenge. You want to exact a pound of flesh, if you would. And in this situation, a pound of flesh could be start with a measurement of, you know, someone's certain member being lopped off. Now, that would be a nice way to start that pound being removed. You know, I know it's violently very, very visual moment there for some guys going, whoa! But you should be thinking that at all times, and there you go. If you wanted to find a location for this film, you wanted to match up certain scenes, you could go to the Pepperdine University in Malibu, California. Anyway, this is really what I like to note as a weak supernatural rape revenge film. This film does have a good amount of good bloodshed to it. It's not shocking blood in there. It is, look, is it fake looking at times? Hell yes, it is. But it's practical effects. It's still practical. Okay, it's not CGI. There is probably one gruesome scene in that third act, depending on where your scope is on how you would judge it. That's on you. But like I said, a lot of the special effects, I mean, they're not great, okay? They're struggling along. The story's a little choppy, a little weak. But you take it for what it's worth. I mean, look, it's a film that you can find for free on Freevee, Pluto TV, and Tubi. So you can watch it for free. All right? I mean, look, you're paying for the service for the internet. That's the only thing you're really paying for. You got three sites. You can watch it for free. That's it. I don't know what more you really want. I mean, and out of that, I just find it, hey, it doesn't cost you anything. You can go watch it on Freevee, right? Pluto TV and Tubi. Watch it. See if you like it. If you agree, you do. Wonderful. If you don't, no big deal, right? It's not a movie for everybody. And while it's on here, yes, my job is to eventually review the movie. Whether I get to it or not, that's a whole nother matter. But I'm really going to try to strive to get as many of the films that I watch done this year. If you read our editor's greeting for March, you'll understand what's going on and how I'm working to correct that problem. So, you know, that comes out next week, so you guys will be all set to read that. All right, so that kind of closes me out for today. In a couple minutes, you guys will hear Saturday, but otherwise that will be recorded tomorrow. So there you go. We've reached the end of the week, Saturday, February 25th. We started it off with Cal Breeze with the song Midnight Spook Show. Not too sure why I actually picked that track to play. Well, I guess I wanted to open up the show with something. And the film was Curtains from 1983, rated R, an hour and 29 minutes long. And yes, it is celebrating an anniversary, 40 years old. All right, it's a horror mystery thriller. And for our director, we are going to have the Google Translator help us out. Google?
Richard Chupka.
Thank you very much. And our writer for this was a Robert Guza Jr. Okay, let's look at who starred in this particular film. We've got John Vernon, Samantha Egger, Linda Thornson, and Anna Ditchburn. The companies that put it out, well, in the U.S. theater, it was the Jensen Farley Pictures, to be quite honest, I never really recall that company, and on a Blu-ray was Synapse Films. Okay, a summary for everyone. It is six young actresses auditioning for a movie role at a remote mansion are targeted by a mysterious masked murderer. This actually got a 5.6 out of 10. The release date for it was February 25th, 1983 in Phoenix, Arizona. And let's go on. We've got four taglines. So first up, it's going to be, behind every curtain, someone is watching, someone is waiting. Or excuse me, something is waiting. All right. Okay. Could have just said, behind every curtain, murder. That's it. Four words. Think about that. Behind every curtain, murder. And you could have written the word murder in that bloody kind of fun, if you would. Then we got The Ultimate Nightmare. Oh, that doesn't work. I mean, I will get back to why that one doesn't work at all. Then we got The Stage is Set for the Final Act. Oh, here's a bad one. This one is off the video cover, though. So we got six beautiful girls trying to get ahead. And when the curtain fall, five will be dead. Okay, I get it. It rhymes. I get it. Trying to be cute there. But it's far too long. But at least they're using it on the video cover, right? So you got that. Now, the reason I say that The Ultimate Nightmare is very bad. You've already had like Halloween. You got other films that have had that nightmare kind of theme going to them and such. You know, oh, tonight, Friday the 13th is a nightmare. Oh, there's going to be a nightmare happening. You know, we've used that phrase, but The Ultimate Nightmare? And that's saying that your film, I know you want to really champion forward, but you're saying that your film is better than every scare fest that it's ever occurred in the history of filmmaking. Oh, please. Please. I really don't like, and I know a lot of people don't, when you use these words as the best, the ultimate, death-defying, you know, tremendous. I understand you're looking for those words that generate this moment, right? You're like, wow, it's all inspiring. But if your film does not live up to the height of what people expect, then we, the audience, are going to have problems. Now, yes, back in 1983, there really was no way, of getting the word out about a film. There just wasn't. You could have maybe with Fangoria, wrote a little blurb in the back of there, got us put in for maybe $5 and said, curtains, you know, close the curtains on it. I mean, I don't know what people would have said, but the point is, they could have said something, right? And most people would use the Fangoria magazine back then as more of a pen pal system to make contacts. Nowadays, it's on the phones. It's everywhere pretty quick to make a judgment about your film. And I know that sucks. I get that, okay? I mean, I do. But look, they can do it about anything else. I mean, you don't see people running out there saying, hey, Mr. Blogger or Mr. This or Mrs. That. You can't write about this because that's a public thing. They saw it. They made their decision. So what I'm saying here is I just don't like when you use the word ultimate because I can think of some nightmarish things. I can. You all know I can come up with some doozies. I've shared some of them with certain people and they have looked at me with that look of, oh, shit, if we ever give him any money and a camera to film, we're in serious deep shit because Baron's going to really do stuff on set that's going to really freak people the hell out. Ugh. You know, I've gotten that shrill look. I've got the shrugs. I got the squirmy in the seat there and not really happy after I describe a scene to them. So those are the ultimate nightmare. But again, the ultimate nightmare is another one of those phrases. What is ultimate to you is not going to be ultimate to somebody else. And if you don't live up to the ultimate that this person has in their head, it will not go well. Back in 83, you could say it and you could get away with it. Today, no dice. All right. This film was used Canadian money to be made, so that was 3.7 Canadian dollars. A little trivia for you. So we got here the opening credits give John Vernon's fictional director, John Stryker, credit as the film director. In this situation, Richard decided not to have his name on the credits. Now, there's a lot of reasons directors do this. I don't really go with this plan. Usually between production and editing, something happened between the production and editing with the producers and the editing staff. I really don't know. We don't seem to have any details on that. So that becomes a bit of a problematic moment. Anyway, Lynn Griffin, she wore her own clothes and she wrote her own stand-up routine for the film. So that was kind of interesting. And she's also the mother of Kay Griffin, who played one of the inmates in the asylum. So note that. And it should be noted that the film originally started late 79 into 1980, but the production was plagued with problems. And it even got shelved for about a year, which then it had several rewrites, plenty of reshoots. Even I think there was some recasting done. And probably all these factors made the director, Richard, decide, you know what, I'm just going to wash my hands of the whole thing. And so when the film finally got finished, it's 1983. So we're coming a little out of that slasher, gory galore moment, if you would. And we're teetering here. So that kind of, I think, maybe gives us the foundation of what happened with the film as to why it cratered. And perhaps even with the director wanting his name removed from the final product. It could be a reason. I'll be going way, way out on a limb there, so I'm not going to swear to that. Now, the film does reference Prom Night from 1980, so be aware of that. I should mention, though, how should I put this? It does take a little bit from Black Christmas also. I do want to say the Resurrection!